I can legitimately add at least $12,000 more in profit per month from a purpose-built building than from going and converting a house. Those two things are ultimately my goal. How do I make 500 grand a year and work 4 hours a week? I can do that best with a purpose-built building or with a conversion, but I tell you what, it will be much more difficult to do it the way you want to do it. I have a better option than the dinky RIL. Let me show you how to create a luxury new construction mansion of an assisted living. When I started out in assisted living, nobody had a roadmap for how to build and operate a luxury assisted living. I'm here to document my journey as I grow my business and provide you tips and strategies for you to succeed. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Assisted Living Investing. I'm your host, Brett Schott-Cavis, and I build and operate assisted living mansions. And there's a number of different ways to do that. My favorite way is new construction. But when I got into this, I started by buying an existing property. It was a 3,000 square foot house, and I did about a 3,500 square foot addition. So I want to talk to you today about that process, pros and cons. What is it like to convert a house to make it a big luxury assisted living? So my whole niche is I do 16 beds, 16 private rooms, private bath, a chef, a salon. I have all the care and amenities that you could get at the big smelly facility, right? My goal is to charge the equivalent rate of what is the most expensive new construction big facility in my area, right? So I'm going to come at it from that perspective. If you wanted to not do a little dinky RAL, right? But if you wanted to have a big BA mansion style home and you did not want to go new construction, you wanted to start with an existing product and convert that home or do an addition and a conversion to that home, I want to talk about that process today because that's where I started. That was my first go around. And so we'll break this down into a couple different processes here. We'll talk about the pros, we'll talk about the cons, and we'll talk about some action steps. If you are going to go this way, what should you do? So that's what we'll finish up today. Okay, so let's get into this. Let's talk about the advantages first. Why should you consider converting a house? What makes it easier? And I think the opportunity and the understanding of it is the first place we start. And what I mean by that is everyone can understand a house. Everyone has lived in a house. They've been to houses, right? You can understand that there's small houses and there's big houses. And all you really need to do is find a big house, right? Or take a small house and make it a big house. People can more easily understand the concept of let's buy a house and let's remodel it, or let's buy a house and convert the garage, and or let's buy a house, convert the garage, and build new construction into the backyard and add a bunch more bedrooms, right? That's easier for people to grasp. So I think from that perspective, it's less intimidating than buying vacant land and building new construction. That sounds just super scary to people. So I think it's more approachable in this way. I think that there's definitely challenges to doing this, but we'll get there. It is easier for people to understand. I think it's easier for people on a lot of different ways, including financing. It's easier for your bank to understand what you want to do. You want to buy a house, you want to convert it, you want to do an addition, you want to have 16 private rooms. It already has a kitchen, right? You just need to make the bathrooms ADA, maybe widen the hallways, do all these different things. That's what you want to do. And it's easier for you to understand. It's easier for your lender to understand and potentially for investor partners, if you want to bring them on, for them to understand. Now, the next thing is there is a lot more opportunity. There is a lot more options as far as houses, right? If you were in your city and you wanted to be within a 30-minute window, the amount of houses that you had to potentially start with on doing due diligence is, you know, 100,000 or something, right? Like there is a ton of houses around you. If you compare that to vacant land, there may not be, you know, a tiny fraction of the amount of options. Now, most of those houses you probably cannot do, and we'll talk through that on the con side. But nonetheless, you start with a huge wide margin of, oh, there's so many houses in these areas that I could do. I can at least start my due diligence on. And I think that makes the opportunity easier to understand and easier to kind of learn and start taking action steps on. So as we're going through these action steps, you're saying, hey, here's a bunch of houses, right? We're talking about due diligence. We're talking about permits. We're talking about talking to the city. This is definitely easier than the new construction side as far as plans and permits, right? You're starting with an existing house. You could have an architect or maybe a draftsman come in, measure your walls, put it all into a CAD file for you. And then you have like, here's my structure, right? You have it all in PDF. So you can start there. You could start by, you know, drawing some different things up, and you could potentially give to an architect or an engineer, or you can maybe even do it yourself on the first draft and show the city as you're going through due diligence. Hey, here's what I want to do. I have this house that I own or that I like. I want to rework this, you know, this home to be this assisted living, right? I want to add bedrooms in the back. I want to do an addition over here. I want to convert the garage. Here's the floor I'm going to bring up and level in the garage. Here's the where we're going to go. Here's how we're going to connect to the city, you know, sewer lines or water lines, all these different things. It's definitely easier to get into and to talk to the city about, at least on the research side, as you're going through this, as opposed to, oh, here's a vacant piece of land over here. And, you know, I'm not sure how we're going to do all these things. There's 100 different options, right? When you're starting with a house, there's much less options. You only have so much room in the backyard, right? If you're going to do an addition, it's going to go right there. Like, that's where it's going. There's no other space for it, right? Like, it's very clear. I have, you know, 60 feet, right? Okay, I can, you know, build up until my setback, right? I can build another 40 feet of an addition in the backyard. So there's a lot less options, which makes it easier to start with and makes it easier for you to communicate with the city with and say, okay, here's what I want to do, starting through my plans, through my permits. Now, plans and permits, you'll still have to go through, right? There's still going to be a bunch of hoops to go through, but this is definitely easier going through these plans and permits on the conversion side. Again, starting with an existing product and saying we're reworking it, or we're reworking it and adding an addition to it. That is easier going through the system with the checklist and the boxes you got to check with the city and the fire marshal and all that kind of stuff. Now, there's definitely going to be challenges there, and we'll get there. But it's definitely going to be easier than building new construction. The next really big advantage is the capital, right? The money it takes. It will most likely be cheaper to buy an existing home and convert it and or add an addition to this existing home than building new construction. Now, I say that it's going to be cheaper. It's probably going to be cheaper because you're not going to build your perfect product. Right? If you build new construction, you can make it exactly the way you want. You're not going to have it exactly the way you want. You're going to have challenges there. So there's a pro and a con to that. And ultimately on the pro side, it's going to be smaller. It's going to be not as great as you had hoped because you have limitations, right? You have existing rooms, you have existing hallway sizes, you have a shell of the building, and it's like, oh, you can only do so much. So because you can only do so much, it's going to cost less, right? Which is an advantage on one side of this thing. And coupling with that, it's easier to get the financing, right? You have a real piece of property. It has land and a house that's attached to it. There's collateral there. When you go to the bank, they can see, hey, here's my house. Okay, you're going to demo it. You're going to do an addition or convert it, right? Okay, well, at least you're starting with real property. On land, it's just vacant land, right? Like, you're going to put so much more money into it before that collateral is realized. So there is risk on both sides, but I would say there's less from the bank's perspective when they start with, here's a product, and you know what, we're going to add an addition over here. Well, at least you still have this house. If you screwed it all up, at least they still have that house, right? Like, there's more collateral. It's easier for the bank to understand. It's easier for them to pencil. And so I do think that the financing is easier to get if you're going to convert a home or a building, do a conversion or an addition. I think that's easier to get that financing than it is to do the new construction side. So the last advantage that I want to touch on is time. I think this is a faster option than building new construction. It could be potentially maybe 6 months faster because the planning side is usually faster on this than on the new construction side. And the actual construction side, if you're doing a remodel and an addition, you're still probably several months shorter on this side than on the new construction side. So hopefully you're saving about 6 months of time and therefore getting your residents in and making more money and cash flow during that 6 months than you would be if you waited and had to build your perfect product, which would take longer. So there's definitely some great pros to this, right? I went through this process. I built my first mansion in Georgetown like this, buying an existing home. It was built in the 70s. I gutted the thing down to the studs. I did a huge addition on it and completely reworked it, and it looks brand new. And so you can actually check that out. You can go on our website, palm.university, hit the virtual tour. That is the building you'll see, not our new construction products, but you'll see our home conversion there. So next, let's talk about the challenges. There are definitely a lot of challenges, and there's definitely some things that can potentially stop you from doing this kind of deal. So let's start with finding the right house. We talked about how there's so many houses, right? There's thousands and thousands in your area, but honestly, most of those you can't do. Right, you may not know that you can't do them yet. If you're just starting this journey, you haven't gone through the due diligence, you haven't talked to the city or the county or the fire marshal or the health department yet. You may think like, oh yeah, I'm just going to take a house. I'm going to convert it, right? I see the RAL people doing that. They're converting garages and having six beds, right? I don't think that's the way to go. And I'm going to break that down why. So you have thousands of houses. Most likely, you probably can't use very many of them. If you wanted to have a 16 bed, if you wanted to have a luxury product, if you wanted to compete with the big smelly facility down the street and say, hey, you know what? We have private rooms, we have private baths, we have a chef, we have a salon, and provide all the care and amenities that that big box does down the street. You should never go over there, bring mom over here, right? If that's the approach you take like I do, it's very, very difficult to go this home conversion way. Because honestly, you're probably not gonna find a house that has 16 private bedrooms and 16 private baths. That's just not realistic. You're not gonna find this already existing mansion that's already 7, 8, 10,000 square feet and ADA compliant, right? Like, that's just not realistic. So you'd have to start by starting with a home and then converting it into that. And so finding the right property to start with can be very challenging. And the biggest thing that you're gonna find is you're gonna have blocks along the way. So I wanna talk through some of these blocks, and I call them deal killers. So the biggest deal killers are HOA, the city zoning, and the fire marshal. So we'll kind of unpack those one at a time. But ultimately, I am a huge proponent that you do not wanna do this in HOA. There are people out there saying, hey, you can do this in a HOA and fair housing law protects you and you can do those kind of things. Sure, you can. But you are probably going to get sued. You may not be able to sell your business when you want to exit the deal. And they may say, okay, yes, you can do it, but we're going to limit you to six beds. I don't want six beds, right? That's not a product that makes money. It doesn't even break even. So to find a house that is the perfect house that you can do and you can convert, it has to first and foremost have no type of restrictions on it. So that would be no HOA. And then also no other restrictions against the deed, against the property. And a lot of times I see them, they say no commercial use, they say no business use, things like that. If it's in there, you're probably gonna get blocked somewhere down the chain. And you wanna find these things out early so you don't buy the property and then find out 6 or 9 months later, oh, I can't even do the deal, right? I just lost a year of time and I just lost 50 grand or 100 grand. Now I have this property that's gutted. Now what do I do, right? Like, oh, I got to do a flip on it now and try and list it again, and I'm going to lose my butt on it, right? Like, there are a lot of people I hear that don't do the proper due diligence on the front side, and they get into bad situations. Realistically, if you have 100,000 houses, you're going to really, really cut that down, right? To maybe there's only a few houses in your entire city that's actually feasible, right? So the next thing is the zoning. That is the biggest deal killer in this type of deal. If you are going to buy a house and convert it, a house is a house, right? It's residential. It's usually zoned R1 for residential one, right? Like, if you go to the city and say, hey, I want to take this house. I want to do a big addition. I want to convert it and build the most beautiful luxury assisted living mansion. I'm going to take care of 18 grandmas. It's going to be the best. They're going to be like, but that's a house. That's residential. Right? What you're talking about is a business. So therefore you are commercial. You cannot do that there. You can only do that in this area, in commercial or in mixed use or in multifamily or whatever their list of things are that are appropriate zoning types, right? Like 99% of the time you're going to find a house and the city is going to say, nope, you can't do that, right? Like, if you go and do your due diligence, if you talk to the 2, 3, 4 cities in your area that you be interested in doing this on, literally every one of those cities will probably tell you you cannot do what you want to do in residential zoning, which really cuts out almost every single house in your entire area. You could have a 30-minute drive around you and have zero options, right? That's why this REO converting a house thing, I don't think it works. I don't do that, right? I want to go and I want to find out what are the appropriate zoning types that I can do, right? Can I be in C1 in commercial? Can I be in mixed use? Can I be in R4 for multifamily? Can I buy agriculture land and go through maybe a special use permit to make that the appropriate zoning type? And that's what I've done several times. So this is my path because I don't want to get blocked. I never want to buy a property and potentially lose money, right? So the zoning is the biggest deal killer out there if you want to go this route of buying a house and converting it. The next biggest deal killer out there is the fire marshal. You want to go and you want to talk through the due diligence part with the fire marshal. What type of fire sprinklers do I need? Even if your state does not require it on the licensure, and almost all of them do, even if your state does not, that doesn't mean that your city or your county or your fire marshal will not require it. You're gonna have to comply with the most stringent of all the codes. So anything federal, state, county, city, the most stringent of all of those things you're gonna have to comply with. So then there's a whole list of questions that I have, my due diligence questions to the fire marshal. What type of fire suppression system do I need? Residential versus commercial, NFPA 13 versus D or R are huge difference in costs. And ultimately, they might be a deal killer there. You may not be able to get the water volume and pressure to be able to actually do it in one of these residential areas, even if the zoning said it was fine. Or there may not be a turnaround. If you're in a cul-de-sac or you're in a narrow street, your fire marshal may say, hey, I can get my engine in there. I just can't get it back out. So you know what? I'm not going to give you, this permit, right? We're not going to give you a CO to do this kind of deal. There's so many different things that the fire marshal is vitally important on if you're having end-of-life care, right? Like it's a business use. The fire marshal has the authority to tell you no if ultimately you're using residential style property or ultimately another type of property that the fire marshal can't work with. The next big one out there is ADA. What level of compliance do you have to have with ADA? Because for me here in Texas, I have to have at least 50% accessibility for all my different bedrooms, bathrooms, anything like that. There's a bunch of different compliance. Now think about this. If you took the house that you are currently living in and you said, hey, let me convert this into an assisted living and I want it to be accessible, I want it to be ADA compliant. Most of your house is not ADA compliant. The door swings that you have are not compliant. Your bathroom sizes are not compliant. Your showers, your sinks are not compliant. Your bedrooms, closets may not be compliant. The ramps going in and out of the houses may not be compliant. There are so many things that you may literally have to tear down. So that's what I had to do. I started with this 1974 house. It was like 5 bedrooms, 3,000 square feet, all single level. And I gutted it down to the studs, and most of those walls could not stay. None of my bathroom sizes could stay. They are not big enough for ADA. When you have regular bathrooms versus ADA compliant bathrooms, man, take a look, Google ADA compliant bathrooms. Look at the size of these things. They're huge, right? The toilets have to be in a certain spot. There has to be a certain amount of inches in front of the showers to be able to transfer in there. There's so many things that are like, well, I can't use this bathroom. I thought I could, now I can't, right? Like when you start with a home, you're gonna be really, really challenged to be able to make this work for compliance for you. And then that kind of brings me into the practicality. Like you're actually running a business here, an operations company with 24/7 staff, and you're expecting them to take amazing care of your grandmas and grandpas. When they don't physically have the space in the building to be able to do it, it's very, very challenging. When you have a home conversion and you have a 32-inch hallway, you can barely get anybody down this hallway that's in a wheelchair. It's hard to make a turn, right? Like if you had fire come in with a gurney because they had to take someone out for EMS, you can't get these gurneys down these hallways. You can't make these hard angles, right? When you have a bathroom that's not compliant and you want to give someone a shower and they're end of life and they're in a wheelchair and you have a caregiver outside of them, or perhaps they're a two-person transfer, getting into the shower, there's not the space to have your caregivers hoist somebody up, especially if they're heavy, and move them into the shower. You're making your job for all of your staff super difficult. And I can tell you from experience that you will lose good staff people. They will go right out the door and go to some other assisted living because you're making their job difficult. And it's not necessarily your policies that are making different difficult. It's your building that's making it difficult because it's not purpose built, right? Like you may not have the size that you need for a dining room or a living room. How do you get 16 grandmas and grandpas into this little residential living room that's in a normal size house, right? Like when you have all these grandmas sitting at the table and they're in wheelchairs at the end of life and one of them has to go potty, right? Like I can tell you it's a parade to get all of them out of the row and then bring the one grandma out, take her to the restroom, put her back in, put all the other grandmas back in. Like it is not easy when you don't have a purpose-built building. And so not having this has two negative effects on your operations company. The first we touched on, it makes your staff jobs harder and you will lose the good staff there. The second is you will make less money. When you are converting a home, you're not gonna have your perfect product. You may not be able to get all the bedrooms that you want. You may have some small bedrooms or awkward bedrooms. You may not be able to get private bathrooms for all these people. Ultimately, I've found that converting this house, I have some rooms that don't have a bathroom and they're more kid size. They're like 11 by 12. And I charge about $1,000 less than my medium plus size rooms with a private bath, right? $1,000. There's no additional expenses to that $1,000. There's not extra staffing needs because of that. There's not extra food, right? That is pure profit. If I have $1,000 less times 16 bedrooms because I have 16 small bedrooms without a bathroom, I'm losing net profit of nearly $16,000. There is a huge amount of potential profit that is lost by going this route of buying a house, converting it, and not having a purpose-built house. So the other challenge on the construction side, right? We said that it's probably faster. It's probably easier to get through permits, but there's gonna be a lot more unknowns, a lot more variables when you're not building new construction. If you're taking a house and you're saying, hey, I wanna convert this. I wanna, you know, take down this wall. Is this wall load-bearing? We don't know yet, right? There's sheetrock up there. We haven't been able to check. When we say, hey, we wanna connect this new construction wing to the house, how is that beam gonna go? Well, we don't know yet. We have to pull off the exterior siding to be able to see. There's gonna be a lot more variables during construction, which ultimately means a lot more change orders during construction. You may start with, hey, you know what? It's gonna be a lower cost number, price per square foot. It's gonna be lower than going new construction. But after you get through this whole thing and you learn the lessons here and you get the change orders because you just didn't know what was gonna happen yet, it may not be, right? Like you may end up price per square foot, the exact same price to build new construction versus this home conversion, right? So there are definitely more challenges to expect during the construction. There's definitely more delays to expect during the construction than if you had everything brand new and built exactly the way it was designed. So that's us wrapping up our pros and our cons, right? There's definitely strong cons. There's definitely strong pros. And really, it's for you to decide if you want to go this route. And if you did, I've gone this route and I want to share some tips of what you should look for. So when starting, you want to learn your due diligence stuff. You want to go talk to the city, talk to the planning department, talk to the building department, talk to the fire marshal, talk to the health department. Learn all of your deal killers up front so you can say, I cannot be in this area, or this area. But perhaps now you have some options. You have some zoning options that you are able to do and you can plug that into a map and say, okay, here's where I want to look. And when I'm looking for houses, here's what I think is the best way to go. I want to find a single story. I definitely never want to have a second story home there, right? So I want to have a single story, perhaps a ranch house. So I bought a 1970s ranch house, right? It was all single level. And then I had a bigger lot. I was on 1 acre. So I was able to expand to the side and to the backyard to ultimately add about another 3,500 square feet and 8 more bedrooms and bathrooms. I think that's the best way to go. You may not need to start with a house so big. You might actually be able to start with a 1,500 square foot, 2,000 square foot, a small house, and just literally use that entire house for your great room, for your kitchen, for your office, for your living area, and then build off to the left and build off to the right. Here's 8 bedrooms over there. Here's 8 bedrooms over here. That may be the easiest way to go. A small house on a big lot, and there's plenty of space for parking, right? Like that may be the easiest path and say, you know what? architect, let's design this and let's add a wing over here and a wing over here. The other thing that is important to consider is parking. You will have a lot of cars on your property at some point. You may have a minimum that's only a few cars. So literally for me, the state says I only need one parking spot for every four residents, right? So that's really only four parking spots that they're requiring. I can tell you from experience, there are plenty of times where I have 10 to 15 cars at our assisted living. And it's really the staffing overlap between two different shifts. You're going to have two caregivers here, two caregivers here. Then I have two managers. Then I have a chef. Maybe Laura shows up. There's a whole bunch of cars already. Then I have a couple families that are visiting. And then I have hospice and home health. All of those people, they all seem to come at the same time, right? It's like Monday at 11 o'clock. That's when everyone shows up. And it's like, man, my driveway is full. If you only had four parking spots, there's no way you'd have space for this. So for me, I like having a bigger lot. I like 1 acre as a minimum for one of our mansions. And I like to have it where I can have my staff parking on the side, out of the way. I don't want all of my staff cars in the driveway in the front. I like to have that space for my tours, for my family to come visit and park. So I'll put a U-shaped driveway in the front, and then I'll have like more of an L along the side of the property and keep all my staff parking over there. The last tip that I would give you is if you're gonna buy an existing home and convert it, don't buy a beautiful house. Don't spend money on something that is top of the market because you're probably gonna have to gut that house. When you start learning about ADA requirements, when you start learning about the bathroom sizes, the bedroom sizes you're gonna need, if you have a beautiful house, you might have to demo it down to the studs. You might have to move walls. You might have to remove your kitchen cabinets because it doesn't have a 3-compartment sink if your health department requires that kind of stuff or commercial components in there. You might start with this beautiful house you paid top of the line for and demo it all down and just wasted a couple $100,000. For me, I would think it's better to start with an outdated house that's single story and maybe small with a big lot in the right area. I want to be in an affluent area. I want to check the zoning. I don't mind being on the outskirts of the city. I think that's a better way to go anyways. So to kind of put this all together for you, there is a lot of advantage to this. I think it's easier to understand. It's easier to get into. But having gone through this and now building new construction, to be honest, I will only build new construction from here on out because of the two biggest reasons. My staffing challenges, which ultimately means when there's more challenges, then my managers get more issues, then I get more issues, and I want to be a passive owner. I want to work 4 hours a week, and I can best do that with a purpose-built house. The second is the finances. I can legitimately add at least $12,000 more in profit per month from a purpose-built building than from going and converting a house. Those two things are ultimately my goal. How do I make $500,000 a year and work 4 hours a week? I can do that best with a purpose-built building or with a conversion, but I tell you what, it will be much more difficult to do it the way you want to do it. So I hope this has been able to help you. And if it has, I just have one ask. We don't charge anything for what we do. We don't run ads on this podcast. If this is helpful to you, I would ask that you share it, that this can help someone else. This can show them another path than the dinky REL. They don't have to struggle with the 6-bed. They can go this way and build a mansion. So thanks for joining me. I will see you guys on the next one.